This is Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hey everybody, welcome to Prop Points. I'm Jeff Erickson. He's Nick Whalen. We are with rotowire.com. Check out our new brand new look there. It's more than just a fresh coat of paint. Whole lot of stuff for you guys to check out over at RotoWire, including our RotoWire football draft kit now live on the site, and as well as our app as well. You guys can download as well for all RotoWire subscribers. We're going to talk a little milestones today. Clayton Kershaw reached a big one. We're going to talk a little DeAndre Ayton. We're going to do rate that prop. Wimbledon, RotoWire Sasha Yodashkin is going to join us there. Talk a little Wimbledon there. I've got that on in the background. Upset City over there at Wimbledon, so we'll talk about that. And it's Dinger Thursday, so we're going to talk home run props as well as some of the other lines for a relatively small Thursday slate, but a lot of evening games, actually, surprisingly enough. Nick, let's start out west, though. Clayton Kershaw became the 20th pitcher all-time and third active pitcher to reach 3,000 strikeouts. Only just barely got there. Got his third one, and then he was done after six innings. He's at exactly 3,000 strikeouts right now. Quite an accomplishment. Wasn't the best game for him, but I wouldn't say quite say dying breed, but a diminishing breed.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, you look at the other two active pitchers, Jeff, who have 3,000 strikeouts in their back pocket. It's a 40-year-old and a 43-year-old in Justin Verlander and Max Scherzer. Obviously, Clayton Kershaw, nearing the end of his career as well. And, you know, started to do some research in terms of looking at some active players who might have a chance to get there as their careers progress. You know, Chris Sale is sitting at just over 2,500. I mean, he's 36. You do wonder if he's the type of guy with his injury history. Is he going to be pitching until he's 41, 42 years old? I mean, with the way that pitchers are handled right now in Major League Baseball, we don't see a lot of guys, you know, routinely going deeper than seven, maybe eight innings at the absolute most. You know, we have these five, six-man rotations. It's tougher than ever, certainly, to reach that 3,000 strikeout plateau. But you know, I think Gerrit Cole is another guy that could have a chance. Obviously, the injury this season is setting him back. He's at about 2250 for his career, 34 years old. You know, another guy who's probably going to have to pitch into his 40s if he wants to get there. But really, the guy who jumped out to me, Jeff, and I had to scroll way down because this guy's in his 20s. Tarik Skubal is somebody that I would highlight right now. He's currently at 786 career strikeouts. I think he's going to have a good chance to do it if he can stay relatively healthy. You know, in terms of early career comparisons to Clayton Kershaw, he's on a very similar path in terms of strikeouts at this point in their careers. And Skubal actually averages more strikeouts per nine at this point in his career than Kershaw did.
Yeah, per nine. But unfortunately, he doesn't get to do nine very often. He got, I think, once this year. And that's it's the not only is it five and six starters for teams, it's also usage in game. Especially early this season, we saw Skubal getting lifted after like 90 pitches and six innings, sometimes even less than six innings. And that's kind of frustrating. You know, we do a lot of outs recorded props. In fact, I'll be talking about one of them later today. And, you know, usually that number set at like 16.5, 17.5. You almost never see something set much higher than that. You rarely do you see seven innings, let alone nine. And I think that's one of the things. It's accumulation. That's where it's different. Yeah. Look at Kershaw. It's also age to level. You know, Kershaw began his career at a pretty young age at the major league level. You know, saw a lot of pitchers today. They don't get the call right away. More often than not, if you're going to see a young pitcher get the call, it's because they came out of college. Chase Burns came out of college that way. You know, Paul Skeens is another one there we'll look at there. Skubal's already had one arm surgery, so that's maybe something that holds back too. I will say one of the things that is positive about accumulating strikeouts is negative towards durability, and that's velocity, extreme velocity. Velocity is up across baseball, and then it leads to increased effectiveness, higher K per nine rates, higher efficiency rates, but shorter usage and more likelihood of injury.
So you're a little more dialed in on this historically, I think, than I am, Jeff. You know, I'm looking at Tarik Skubal last season. You know, of course, won the Cy Young, barely got to 190 innings. You know, Clayton Kershaw early in his career had five seasons in which he was well over 200. When was the shift? Like, was there an exact point in time, or is this something that's just been gradually happening over the course of a decade plus?
I think the latter. I think it's been gradual. I think it tracks. You know, over the last 20 years, we've seen the year-by-year increase in velocity, and I think we've seen the injuries go with it there and the shrinkage of starting pitchers' usage. Also, just the fact that more teams are smarter about third time through the order, let alone fourth time through the order, things of that nature there. analytics have taken over baseball a lot more in the past. And I think for the most part, it's made teams better. And one of the results is just, you know, starting pitchers don't go that third time, fourth time through the order. They get less exposure, which means fewer chances for strikeouts too. Yes, they give up less damage as a result, but that also means, plus I think the bullpens, we see more and more guys with, you know, every team has like five guys that throw 95. It's not just a saying, it's really true in most cases there. You know, other than the paste eating Rockies, I think everybody embraces analytics now to a certain extent. So yeah, I think that's there. And of course the Rockies have other impediments as well, including their elevation. It just makes it really hard to develop pitchers. But I just think it's going to be harder for these teams to reach this milestone unless we see a medical advancement that allows for more durability along with this velocity. I think it's going to be harder and harder to see that happening there. All right, let's talk a little bit about something else that happened in baseball. The Blue Jays. They blew an 8-0 lead, but they still beat the Yankees 11-9. The Jays are now co-leading the AL East. Tampa's just a half game back. The Yankees have a huge run differential difference, but this has been a wild series. You know, the Jays won 3 in a row against the Yanks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, taking the first 3 games of the series, they won 4 in a row overall. And like you mentioned, Yankees are plus 103 in terms of that run differential on the season. Toronto's at just plus 6, right? I mean, they were in the negatives before this series. You look at some of the season-long numbers, you know, it's a pretty middling team in terms of the hitting categories, you know, especially power hitting, but they are third in Major League Baseball on average. They're third in Major League Baseball in OBP, and that tracks with the fact that they are striking out less than any other team in the majors. So that they're finding ways to manufacture runs, even if they're not, you know, hitting a ton of home runs on a game-to-game basis. You look at the pitching staff too, though, Jeff, they're below average in runs allowed per game. They've given up the third most home runs to opponents. They're bottom 10 in baseball in team ERA. So you have to look a little bit deeper to see how exactly the Toronto Blue Jays have gone on this run. I will say, when you look at the expected win-loss numbers for both the Jays and the Yankees versus the actual record, that's something that jumped out to me. You know, that data says that the Jays have won 4 more games than they probably should have so far. The Yankees have won 6 fewer games than they should have this season. The question is, Jeff, now that Toronto is officially a co-leader in the AL East, so they do temporarily have the tiebreaker, would you bet Toronto 3-1 to win the division? Would you think about Tampa Bay at plus 425? Yankees still a relatively heavy favorite at minus 150.
You know, even though the Rays have the better payout, I'd probably not go that way because they're about to embark on this massive road swing in the second half. They played 20 more home games than they have played road games. And I understand that maybe their pitchers are happy to hit the road a little bit there, but generally speaking, teams play better at home. So I would think that there's going to be a drop off from the Rays. I also just think, you know, look at the, you know, budget wise, personnel wise, there's probably a good chance of a little bit of a fall off there. The Jays, on the other hand, they strike me as interesting. Keep in mind, they've gotten absolutely nothing from their big free agent, Anthony Santander. You know, they finally found somebody to take their money, and he's done nothing. He's still not close to returning, but I think over the second half, you might get him back. They've been without Dalton Varsho for a good chunk of the season. He's hurt again right now. You know, Andrés Giménez has actually been a bit of a bust. He also got hurt for a while, too. I think there's areas where they could improve. And now that they signed Vlad Guerrero long-term, you know they're in it to win it. They probably have a little bit of pressure to try to add at the trade deadline, and that's a good thing. You know, I think that, you know, add some more to this team, add some reinforcements. Mm-hmm. You talked about the expected wins versus actual wins. One of the areas where expected wins fall short is quality of bullpen, and I think the Jays actually have a really good back end of their bullpen. Hoffman went through a couple stretches that were shaky, but for the most part, he's been pretty good. The Yankees, they went through that really bad stretch with Devin Williams earlier. You know, Luke Weaver got hurt for a while. That's another thing. They lost Fernando Cruz recently to the IL. So I think that explains some of their issues as far as underachieving goes. I think that I would sprinkle a little bit on the Jays there. I'd play it. So, since we're going to do an early play it or pass it, if you will, I would play it just a little bit there. We're going to talk a little Lakers signing DeAndre Ayton. Before we do that, though, quick note. Did you know that RotoWire has a brand new look and an even better fantasy football draft tools for the 2025 season? Whether you're using the Draft Assistant to get real-time insights as you draft, customizing your own strategy with the Draft Plan Creator, or testing scenarios with the powerful Draft Simulator, RotoWire gives you everything you need to draft with confidence. And right now, VSiN followers get an exclusive offer. Head to rotowire.com, enter promo code VSiN at checkout, and get 15% off any RotoWire product. That's rotowire.com, promo code VSIN. All right, Nick, we have a brand new purple logo on the site at RotoWire. DeAndre Ayton has a brand new purple uniform with the joining the Los Angeles Lakers.
It sure does. And look, the moment that we got the news a couple of days ago that DeAndre Ayton was going to be bought out, there's a reason that the word Lakers was trending on Twitter within like 10 seconds, because right. I think this was the foreshadowed move all along. DeAndre Ayton, of course, shares an agent with Luka Doncic. And, you know, the Lakers end up bringing him in on a really nice discounted deal. It's a 2-year deal. It's going to pay him a little bit over 16 mil. It has a player option for next season. So they're really only on the hook at this point for $8 million. You know, I think the idea is that DeAndre Ayton plays relatively well, rehabs his value, moves on a larger contract after this year. And of course, he's still being paid by the Portland Trailblazers. So this is similar to the situation with Damian Lillard, where he's not going to go out onto the market looking for a max contract. He's already got that in his back pocket. When it comes to DeAndre Ayton, you know, we need to separate the draft capital from the player that he's been. You know, I think the numbers are a little bit empty, some questions about his work ethic. I think it's going to be really interesting, Jeff, to see how he meshes with a really intense, detail-oriented coach like J.J. Redick. Those are two very opposite personalities. I think that's going to be really interesting. But even despite that, Ayton falling into the Lakers' laps like this was a best-case scenario. Lakers, by the way, reportedly engaged on a potential Andrew Wiggins deal with the Miami Heat. So we'll see if anything comes to bear there. But still a lot to come, I think, for this offseason with the Lakers as we wait out what's going on with LeBron James as well.
Indeed. Lakers needed a big man. We'll see if Ayton's the type of big man they needed. Rate that prop. Coming up next on Prop Points.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back into Prop Points here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. It's time to play a game of Rate That Prop, taking a look at the night slate for Thursday in Major League Baseball. We do have one game ongoing right now, Jeff. The Marlins up 4-1 on the Minnesota Twins. We're in the bottom of the eighth there, two outs now with the Marlins hitting. Augustin Ramirez with a two-run homer early in this one to put the Marlins ahead. Matt Wallner did homer for the Twins in the seventh inning, but again, still 4-1 Marlins as Miami looks to stay hot. Did drop a game yesterday, but prior to that had won 8 in a row. Jeff, let's take a look at the late slate for Thursday night. And again, to do that, we'll play one of our favorite games here, Rate That Prop. Our producer, Michael Cohen, he throws out a prop. Jeff, you give it a 1 through 5 rating. The higher the number, the more confident you are in that bet. We will begin with Robbie Ray taking the mound tonight, going up against the Diamondbacks. Rate that prop, Robbie Ray over 17.5 outs recorded. This is at minus 145.
Yeah, so on one hand, I think Ray's a pretty solid pitcher. The Giants need him to record some length. They went 10 innings yesterday. Their starters have struggled in this series. So the bullpen has been carrying a heavy load, so they really could use Robbie Ray to go deep in this game. However, I mean, obviously, the Diamondbacks have a pretty good lineup. The ballpark is a tough place for lefties to pitch in sometimes, and Robbie Ray is kind of all over the map. Now, I think if you look at him, you know, he it's all about whether he has his command on that given day. He can run up that pitch count pretty high at times. So I'm rating this a 3. There's definitely a path where he could get there. There's also, I could see him going like 5 1/3 and just like, he's at 112 pitches at that point in time. So they have to go elsewhere.
All right. Well, we'll start out with a 3. Nice and safe to begin today's game of Rate That Prop. All right, let's move on to Yankees Blue Jays. Talked about that series in the opener. Blue Jays have been red hot, co-leading the American League East with the Yankees. Rays lurking just a half game back. Looking at the pitching tonight, Jeff, rate that prop. Clark Schmidt, under 2.5 earned runs allowed. This one also at minus 145.
Yeah, Clark Schmidt's been a hero. He didn't pitch well in his last time out against the A's, but before that, he had a 28-inning scoreless streak. Really like a lot what he's done. And again, this is a case here where the Yankees are almost asking him to be a stopper. And I don't know how he'll react to that. Maybe sometimes the pressure will be help him, sometimes it won't. But I like a lot of what he's done lately, last start notwithstanding. So I really like this prop. I'm going to give it a 4. I'm not quite running to the window. I'm not saying here, take my money, especially because at the minus 145 price, that's one thing I don't really love, but I think he can get there.
All right, Yankees are favored on the money line on the road tonight. Chris Bassett on the other side of that matchup. You can get New York at minus 132 if you are interested in that money line play over at DraftKings. Moving along, we will go now to Jose Quintana. Jeff, Brewers finishing up their series against the New York Mets. Jose Quintana, 5+ strikeouts tonight against that Mets lineup. Plus 155 is the price. Rate that prop.
I'm only rating it at 2. There's a lot of reasons. One, the weather. It's like the one place tonight there where I think rain might be a significant part of the forecast there. Always shortens the starting pitching outing, or at least has the threat of doing so. Two, Quintana's not a big strikeout pitcher to begin with there. If you look at him so far this season, 41 strikeouts in 60 innings. Three, the Mets, they don't strike out a whole lot. And especially against lefties, they're 24th in baseball in terms of striking out percentage, 21.2%. Most teams against lefties strike out quite a bit more. Add those all together, and I don't think I see a whole lot of pathway there for a lot of strikeouts for Quintana. So, of course, he's going to strike out the first six guys and make me look like a fool. But because it's the Jose Quintana revenge game. He used to pitch for the Mets at one point in time in his storied career. But no, I don't think this is a good prop at all.
I'm just staying away from anything to do with the Brewers at this point, Jeff. I feel like anytime I bet a Brewers game, I'm just completely wrong. You and I both loved Mizorowski yesterday. I'm watching the game at the gym. He gives up a grand slam. Game just felt like it was over at that point. Quintana, by the way, plus 265 to record a win tonight. If you disagree with anything that Jeff just said, but I'm with you on that, Jeff. That's an easy two for me. Rate that prop. Taking a look at Shohei Ohtani, Dodgers facing the White Sox tonight. Shohei Ohtani, 2+ total bases, minus 145.
It's just such a high price for such a big accomplishment. But again, you know, if he hits a triple, he hits a home run, you know, the thing is walks will kind of work against us sometimes, but you get the stolen bases, it could get there. You look at the matchup tonight, it's against Aaron Civale. I'm going to say something that's very rarely said. Aaron Civale has been kind of rolling lately. One earned run last time out. He did struggle against the Blue Jays, but before that, he had a stretch there where he was giving up 2 earned runs or less in 5 consecutive starts. So he hasn't necessarily been an easy mark, which I found to be a little bit of a surprise because he hasn't been that great of a pitcher all season long. But because of that, it's hard to bet against Ohtani. So I'm giving it a 3. It's like one of those, okay, yeah, I could see it. Mm-hmm. I'm probably not eager to do that, especially at the minus 145 price. But yeah, I'm not against it either. I'm not stridently against it. I'll probably find something else, but I could see it.
Mm-hmm. We'll take a look at Cody Bellinger. We'll take a look at Kyle Tucker in a moment. But first, if you're serious about winning this football season, the VSiN NFL Betting Guide is your first real edge, and it's available right now. It's packed with in-depth previews of all 32 teams, season win total breakdowns, best bets from your favorite VSiN experts, player props and betting projections, everything you need to bet smarter all football season long. You can lock in our football special for just $175 to get full VSiN Pro access through the Super Bowl, including every betting guide, daily best bet emails, 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app, and all the data and all the tools over at VSiN.com. The early bird pricing expires July 31st. You got a few weeks here, but don't wait. Sign up today. Get your copy of the NFL season betting guide over at VSiN.com/subscribe. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Playing a game of rate that prop here on Prop Points, fittingly, looking at the Thursday MLB slate. Jeff, Cody Bellinger, going back to that Yankees Blue Jays series, Cody Bellinger over 1.5 hits plus runs plus RBIs, minus 155 tonight. So you're laying a little bit here. What do you rate this one?
Yeah, I don't love the price. I'll state that right off the top there. Minus 155. Bellinger's had 9 at-bats against Chris Bassett, 919 OPS, so that's pretty good. He has had a homer against him. He's had a couple of hits. He's also walked a couple of times, too. That helps. So I could see it. Bellinger's been hitting relatively well lately, so that's also in his favor. Something there that we could look at there, in the last week, a 950 OPS. So all those point to a decent amount there. I mean, it's such a small sample size. The Yankees as a whole, you don't know really which way they're going to go. And again, it's the price that's holding me back from making it anything greater than a 3.
All right, let's take a look at Kyle Tucker, Cubs facing the Cleveland Guardians. It is Dinger Thursday, Jeff, so we're going to lean into that. Rate that prop. Kyle Tucker just to hit a home run tonight, plus 320.
Again, This is a three. I mean, again, I'd like a higher price, plus 320. I think this has changed. This could change a little bit because no longer is Luis Ortiz pitching. We haven't talked about that yet. That's an issue that's ongoing right now with baseball. Ortiz has been suspended as part of a gambling probe. So as part of that, they're bringing in a lefty, Joey Cantillo, that's going to be pitching instead of Ortiz. And yet, you know, Tucker's price has gone down. I'm looking at the DraftKings Sportsbook right now, and it's now at plus 295. So hopefully, if you were so inclined, you jumped on the 320 price. I'm a little surprised against the lefty that it did that there. But hey, things happen for a reason. There you go. So I'm going to rate it a three as far as Dinger Thursday goes. I have a different Cub in mind when we get to that later on in the show. But Tucker is obviously a strong player and a decent ball, a great ballpark to hit in there. So it's always a good place for him to work out.
We're going to talk some Wimbledon with our guy, Sasha Yodashkin from rotowire.com in a bit here, but we got some extra time, Jeff. So I'm going to throw you some bonus rate that props.
Okay.
Heading into Thursday night. You know, I've been bedabbled a little bit in these combined home run markets. I haven't had a ton of luck, you know, just picking singular home run hitters night to night. I feel like you've been, your hit rate has been a lot higher on these, but I'm looking at James Wood and Riley Green, one plus homer between the two of them tonight, plus 140. What would you rate that?
Well, you're talking about the two best home run hitters in that particular game.
I am.
The ball has been flying out in that series so far. Digging up the starting pitching matchup, it's Dietrich Enns pitching, a lefty for the Tigers, Jake Irvin for the Nats. I like the Riley Green side, I'll tell you that much. Jake Irvin is a little tater-tastic. Yep. 19 home runs allowed in 17 outings so far. So yeah, let's get on board that side. I mean, lefty on lefty, you kind of worry about a little bit with James Wood, but and in fact, Enns hasn't allowed a big league homer yet this year, but it's only been six innings, so I'm really digging deep here as far as it goes. 2019, he allowed 37 homers at AAA, but that was in El Paso. He's obviously spent a lot of time overseas, so he's a little bit of a black box for us to try to dig into. I'll give it a three.
Okay. All right, we'll take a three. We'll take a three on the bonus rate that prop. Couple homers yesterday in that first game of the doubleheader for Riley Green. Six RBI in that one. We're going to head to break. When we come back, some tennis talk here on Prop Point. Sasha Yodashkin from rotowire.com. He's going to stop by talking all things Wimbledon. We'll give you picks for the men's and the women's brackets. Coming up next, here on Prop Points.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's Wimbledon time. We're in the second round, the last day of the second round of the tournament for the singles on both the men's and women's side. Lot to discuss, lots of chaos going on. We need somebody to help us sort it all out. We're bringing in RotoWire's tennis expert, Sasha Yodashkin. You can follow him on Twitter at @syodashkin and read all of his work over at RotoWire. Use promo code VSiN to check that all out. Sasha, welcome. Thanks for joining us today. The story of this tournament has been tons of upsets. You know, especially on the women's side, where we saw Coco Gauff and Jessica Pegula lose in the first round. Jasmine Paolini got knocked off in the second round, number four seed there. So 2-3-4 are already out. Why have we seen so many upsets?
Yeah, been a very upset-filled start, which isn't necessarily unusual for Wimbledon because grass is such a small part of the season that a lot of players don't spend a lot of time on it, come in kind of unprepared. And then on top of that, it's a very abrupt transition going from the very slow clay to the faster grass. So you tend to have a lot of upsets just with like grass court specialists who have good draws against players who are more comfortable elsewhere. And then on top of that, if you look at what the courts look like at the very beginning of the tournament compared to the second week, there's a lot of wear in the grass that starts to happen. But early on, there's like players are literally just trying to find their footing. So it's a great equalizer. So you always get a lot of upsets, but that being said, like you said, this particular tournament has been especially upset heavy. It's only the second time in women's Grand Slam history that four of the top five seeds are out after round two. So, I chalk that up to just the improved depth, both on the men's and women's game. Now there's so many talented players outside the top 50, outside the top 100, who just kind of need that opportunity, and they have the opportunity of a lifetime, and they, you know, they capitalize. So,
yeah. Absolutely. We're looking at number four seed on the men's side, Draper, also down 2-1 and down 5-4 in the fourth as well against Chilich, who's crafty veteran type. I want to go back to the women's side, though. With those upsets, Sabalenka is now such a prohibitive favorite at plus 185. Do you think, A, do you think that's a good number? And B, do you see a favorable betting alternative?
Yeah, I think plus 185 is just about right on Sabalenka. She'll be favored in any individual match she plays, but I wouldn't pick her against the field. She's consistently making deep runs at every tournament that she plays now. So I think she'll be in the mix late in the tournament as usual. But that being said, I think there's a little bit of scar tissue there from losing the Australian Open and French Open finals. So I just don't know how she's going to handle the pressure of being the favorite down the stretch. So I would actually look at Elena Rybakina at plus 450. Probably the best server on the women's tour, which always plays up on grass. 2022 Wimbledon champion, so she's shown she can go all the way. She's on the other half of the draw from Sabalenka, too. So like I said, if that's the finals matchup, I would like Rybakina there as the underdog while Sabalenka's dealing with the pressure. And I think their odds would be a lot closer to each other if not for Rybakina kind of constantly having little injuries or illnesses or just stuff in general that comes up that kind of holds her back. But right now she looks to be rolling at this tournament.
Talking with Sasha Yodashkin, our tennis expert over at rotowire.com. He joins us on the Progressive Guest Line. Sasha, looking at the pricing on the men's side of things, there's really a group of three at the top and then a big drop off to the rest of the field. You got Alcaraz at plus 115 to win the tournament right now at DraftKings, Sinner plus 140, Djokovic 5-1. Got to go all the way down to 22-1 where you find Taylor Fritz. Then another drop off, couple names in the 50-80-1 range. Would you consider betting anybody but those top three favorites?
I mean, I think it's definitely Alcaraz's tournament to lose in general, even though he had kind of a little bit of a first-round scare against Fognini, went five sets. But it's, you know, tennis has been very top-heavy on the men's side for a while now, so it makes sense that the odds drop off that far. That being said, I really don't hate Fritz at 22-1 at all. He came in really good grass court form. He's a big server, which always helps on grass. He already had two tough five setters in the first two rounds, but I think that was more of the product of a really tough draw. And now that he's gotten through that, his draw's actually really opened up there with Zverev and Medvedev both losing already. So I think Sinner, Djokovic, and Alcaraz will be three semifinalists. I like Fritz as the fourth guy to make the semis. And I mean, after that, it's just a hope and a prayer, but at 22-1, you could do a lot worse.
You know, Sasha, you mentioned that tennis is pretty top heavy on the men's side still. To that end, the four seed, Jack Draper, just lost. He's down a little bit there. We used to have the big three, Federer, Nadal, Joker. You know, Joker's still active, obviously. Alcaraz and Sinner are now the big two. Is it the big two? Is there a candidate for a third player to break into that tier?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've been really lucky on the men's side as tennis fans to kind of be witnessing a golden era in the last 20 years of the big three, plus even Murray over there. So now you have, like you said, there's Sinner and Alcaraz, 38-year-old Djokovic kind of trying to stick around as that third guy, but falling off a little bit. So it definitely looks like we're in a big two era with Sinner and Alcaraz winning the last six slams. But that being said, something that made Federer, Nadal, Djokovic so special is they did it for so long, their longevity. So we kind of need to get another decade of Sinner Alcaraz domination before we can really call it like a full-on big two era similar to the big three. And I mean, in terms of guys that could join them, there's a lot of young talented players who are overshadowed by Alcaraz and Sinner. So Draper, who you just mentioned, but he lost. Jacob Menchik's another one, Holger Rune. But the guy that I really want to keep an eye on moving forward is this 18-year-old Brazilian, João Fonseca. He, I think, when I watch him now, reminds me a lot of like a 17, 18-year-old Alcaraz, where you see all the tools to be great. And he seems to have that X factor. He can hit 100-mile-an-hour forehand. He can figure an opponent out and win that way. He's got kind of that natural showmanship that a lot of the top players seem to have. So I think maybe a year or two down the line, once he has a little bit more development time, Fonseca has the best chance of anyone right now to join them. And he's actually a possible quarterfinal opponent for Alcaraz at Wimbledon this year. So I think tennis fans kind of have their fingers crossed that they make it there.
Sasha, I'm curious, from a strategy perspective, when you have a big tournament like Wimbledon, do you do most of your betting pre-flop before matches start? Or, you know, do you want to see how things go? Do you find opportunities to bet live?
So I tend to like to kind of get my sense of where a match is going to be pre-match and stick with that. But tennis does tend to have a lot of really good live betting opportunities that I've seen, because the lines in match tend to swing very strongly, just depending on what's going on. And there's definitely some like arbitrage you can get if you're willing to kind of monitor it. But in terms of live bets, maybe if I have someone as a pre-match pick and they drop the first set, I'll kind of double down at even better odds. But for the most part, I stick with kind of pre-match, because it's just so hard to get a read sometimes on a tennis match in terms of the momentum can shift on a dime. So it's tough to nail that.
We're talking with RotoWire's Sasha Yudashkin. We're going to ask a couple more questions, including about the weather. Always fun to talk about the weather. But first, do you need a proxy? You can join the world's biggest football contest with one trip to Vegas anytime before the season starts. Trusted by thousands of players over the last 9 seasons, Winner's Circle Proxy Service helped clients win over $9.3 million the last 2 seasons. Learn more about using a trusted proxy service. Visit winnerscircleproxy.com/VSIN. Sasha, one of the big storylines in this tournament has been the weather and just how hot it is. Are there certain players that have benefited more from this or been hurt more by this as well? I mean, I've heard so many storylines about it, but what style of play gets hurt by this?
Yeah, I mean, I think the weather storyline has been kind of a little overblown, to be honest. I think it's also cooled down a little bit today. But generally, the weather kind of speeds up the conditions even more, and grass is already really fast. So players who are kind of bigger servers or have more compact strokes get helped out by hotter conditions. That being said, I think some tournaments like the French Open, where, you know, you're grinding 5-set matches on clay, potentially you're really tested physically, that doesn't happen so much on grass. So I don't think it really stands out in terms of certain players with the fitness being a concern, because especially you have tournaments like the Australian Open, Miami Open, that are consistently much hotter than what Wimbledon is. So like, it's hot by Wimbledon standards, but I don't think it's really had a huge impact on any of the results so far.
All right, Sasha, we got about 30 seconds here. Anything that you love that's going to be on your betting card for tomorrow?
Yeah, like tying into the weather a little bit, like we were just saying, a guy with compact strokes, Adrian Mannarino, he's a crafty veteran who can play really well on grass. I mean, we just saw Cilic beat Draper. So the guys who have been around for a while have the grass court experience. He's a heavy underdog against Andrei Rublev, who's a guy with much bigger backswings, generates a lot of power. I think Mannarino is going to be able to kind of just direct the ball around the court against him and use the fact that this match is on grass to his advantage to pull off that upset.
There we have it. Sasha Yudashkin, everybody. You can check out all of his great work for us over at rotowire.com. Check him out on Twitter at @SYudashkin. He joined us on the Progressive Guest Line. We got to hit a break. Some more baseball talk coming your way next. One game in the books. It's Dinger Thursday. Home run props coming up next.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Prop Points rolls along here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Nick Whale and Jeff Erickson hanging out with you until the top of the hour. As always, Make It Rain with Adam Shine coming up right after us here on VSiN. Patrick Maher stopping by the show in about 15 minutes to break down his bets in Major League Baseball. Jeff, we'll finish out the show doing the same. We do have one game that has gone final. The Miami Marlins stay hot, 4-1 win over the Minnesota Twins. You know, Miami has kind of worked its way back to respectability over these last couple of weeks. But Jeff, what a fall off it's been for the Minnesota Twins, who, you know, made a nice surge in May, you know, won all those games in a row, really kept it going through early June. I mean, this team was 7 games above 500 less than a month ago, and all of a sudden now 41 and 46 on the year. They've essentially fallen out of the division race in the AL Central, now 4.5 back in the AL wildcard.
Yeah, indeed. And that's, it's the depth that they're behind, especially in the Central, that, that gets me there. And I think it raises a question. They've gotten a great season out of Byron Buxton so far. He's, aside from that just preordained collision with Carlos Correa, the two most injured players injuring each other, he had that brief concussion IL. He's been healthy for the rest of the season. He's been productive. He's stealing bases. He's playing great defense. He's hitting for power. He's hitting for average. If you're the Minnesota Twins and you don't have a good chance of making the playoffs, your ownership's looking to sell, so your budget is tied up, do you consider trading Byron Buxton at the deadline? I think you should at least have the discussion. You should at least field calls and see what that fetches there, because you know he will draw real prospects. And it'll also provide salary relief for the Twins. Not that I really want the owners to save money. I'm not rooting for dollar for pocketbooks, but if it gives you a chance to restock the farm system, maybe just relaunch again and know that you got the very best possible year out of Byron Buxton, I think you should at least think about it.
I think you want to capitalize and strike while the iron's hot, or strike while Byron Buxton is healthy, is maybe the more appropriate way of putting that. It's a guy who's played more than 100 games twice in his entire career, and he came up all the way back in 2015. I think there's a case to be made, given where he is in his career. He's, what, 31 years old now, that this might be the peak of his value the rest of the way. And like you said, it's not a not an albatross type of contract necessarily, signed that 7 for $100 million back in 2022, but there's still 3 more years left on that deal, a little over $15 million per season. And like you said, you know, the Twins are going through some ownership stuff. They tend to be a cheap team in general. That's certainly something they would factor in. I think the question is, are you far enough back in the wildcard race that you could justify it to the fan base? Or do they even care about that?
They don't care. Look at the attendance in Minnesota right now. And I know I'm speaking right to channel runner Steve Cohen, who is a Twins guy. He knows how low attendance has been. Teams are sick and tired of the fans are sick and tired of the Twins and their ownership and their lack of spending. I don't think that would materially affect attendance. I think it's as low as it gets anyhow. I think you're at rock bottom as far as that goes. So do what's best for the franchise. At least consider that. Maybe you don't get the offers you want, but at least look into it.
All right, so let's turn our attention to the late slate tonight. We'll break down a handful of games. You'll give out your favorite plays. We'll give you a dinger bet for each of these games as well. A lot to talk about, Jeff, surrounding this game tonight between the Guardians and the Cubs at Wrigley. Cubs minus 144 on the money line. Totals coming in at 8.5. Cade Horton on the hill for Chicago. As you briefly mentioned earlier, Joey Cantillo coming up to make a start for the Guardians. Now, he's made a handful of appearances for Cleveland out of the bullpen earlier this season, hasn't pitched in a major league game since late May, but he, of course, comes up to replace the suspended Luis L. Ortiz.
Yeah, and as we've been kind of just seeing this story develop, Ortiz is being investigated for a gambling issue here, and it's two specific pitches, Nick. Whether it's a ball or a hit batsman. And I didn't know you could really dig into it that low, much on live betting. Oh, yeah. You could go that granular and bet pitch by pitch. I don't do that, obviously. So I didn't even know that you could go that deep. The being able to investigate that is pretty crazy. First pitches of a respective inning. So I guess that's something to do with it there. But wow. It's a crazy thing. And, you know, we've seen this in the NBA and the prop market, especially there, you know, that individual player props, that there's been a lot of investigation. Usually it's players like Ortiz or players that are not stars that get this investigation. Right. Pretty big story, I think.
Yeah. You know, I think your first reaction, of course, is these guys are making millions of dollars. Why would you possibly need to do this? I think the lesson that we learned, at least from Malik Beasley this week, is you never know what's going on behind the scenes. Just because they're making that money on the surface doesn't mean that money is staying in their bank accounts, and there might be other motivations there. Of course, still early to speak definitively on this. Jeff Passan did report about 15 minutes ago that he is, Ortiz, that is being investigated for two specific pitches in two separate outings earlier this month. One of those back on June 15th, the other in his last start on June 27th. Essentially, the books detected unusual betting activity on those pitches to be a ball or a hit batsman both pitches, which were the first pitches of their respective innings. So a little bit easier to get that action in, I would imagine, were balls that were well outside the zone. So I'm very curious to see how this develops. The unusual betting activity on a specific pitch, I think that's something that, on the surface at least, seems like it'd be very easy to flag. Also seems like it would be difficult to prove that he intentionally threw a ball.
Yeah, I wonder, you know, I'm sure the second after the show, I'll get on Twitter and I'll see it's been posted everywhere and you'll see like, oh yeah, it was way outside. And, you know, it'll look more obvious. But yeah, it's, you know, because everything's recorded. It's out there. People can get it. About this game, Cantillo started before. So this isn't like, even though he was a reliever this year with the Guardians, he was a starter last year. He was a starter in AAA. He's okay. Kind of a league average sort of type. Cubs hit lefties pretty well. 323 WOBA, 108 WRC plus, 182 ISO. That's really pretty good. So I like the over in this one. Cade Horton's also not that great either. 480, 144. So the bet of over 8.5 minus 112, I like. And it is Dinger Thursday. Let's go Ian Happ plus 425, righty versus a lefty.
All right, let's fly through a few more of these, Jeff. Giants, Diamondbacks. We got Robbie Ray taking in Brandon Pfaadt tonight. What do you like here, and who are we going with for Dinger Thursday?
Okay, so I like the over 8.5 at minus 106. All week long, we've been going with the over in this series, Giants and Diamondbacks. Let's go there again. Bullpens are really taxed in this one. Brandon Pfaadt has really regressed. The one good thing about him, he's only allowed 3 homers at home of his 16, but I'm still thinking I'm going with I'm actually going to go with the Diamondback as my homer guy. A.U. Swenny O'Hara's 17 of his 26 homers have been at home, plus 390 for Suarez.
All right, let's take a look at the Yankees and the Blue Jays. This is Clark Schmidt going up against Chris Bassitt. I know you're looking at both of these pitchers, Jeff, in the prop market as well as a dinger, of course.
Yeah, and the thing I like here is the outs recorded, because I think they're going to lean, each team needs to lean on the starter to give them some innings tonight. So I'm going over 17.5 outs for Schmidt at minus 130. Chris Bassitt, it's 16.5. You pay a little higher price at minus 140. My Dinger Thursday guy, Jazz Chisholm, had a hot June, has had a homer in this series, plus 450. Let's go with it.
All right, let's get one more in here before we give you our G-Bank best bets of the night. Royals Mariners, Seth Lugo going up against Logan Evans. I know you see this as a lower scoring game, Jeff.
Yep, I like Lugo a lot. Good road pitcher. Lower whip on the road, higher K percentage. Logan Evans, people don't know about him. Good enough prospect getting called up to stretch out the rotation. I think he's better than Emerson Hancock. Under 7.5 is the total there at minus 110. Dinger Thursday, have to do someone. I'll go Vinny Pasquantino plus 450. In the Braves Angels game, give me Logan Ohapi plus 425 against the flammable Bryce Elder.
It's time for our best bets of the night. They're brought to you, as always, by GBank, introducing the $500 trifecta from GBank, First Bet, and VSiN. All you need to do is open a GBank Visa Signature credit card in the first 90 days, deposit and play through $1,000 at First Bet to trigger the $500 trifecta. You'll receive $200 in cashback rewards on your GBank Visa Signature card. First Bet will give you a $100 deposit match, and VSiN completes the trifecta with a free VSiN Pro subscription, taking you all the way through October 31st. That's a $200 value. It's the $500 trifecta from GBank, First Bet, and VSiN. You can head over to VSiN.com/GBank. That's VSIN.com/GBank to check out all the details. This one-time promotion is limited to customers opening a new account in response to this offer and will not apply to requests to convert existing accounts. Apply today over at VSiN.com/GBank. Terms and conditions apply. All right, Jeff, let's finish strong here. Your G-Bank best bet of the night.
Keeping it simple. Over in the Diamondbacks Giants at 8.5 minus 106.
I don't see any reason to go away from it, Jeff. I'm taking the Cubs team total over 4.5 tonight. We're getting that at plus money, plus 100 going up against the Guardians. We just talked about what's going on with the pitching situation. I don't think we see Cantillo go deep into this game. You know, Tanner Bibee only went 4 innings last night. Not a great bullpen in Cleveland. Cubs have gone over this number in 9 of their last 14. That's going to wrap the Thursday edition of Prop Points. Jeff will be back with Eric Holterman tomorrow. We're handing it off to Adam Schein. Make it rain coming up next.